Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LA Talk Radio, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. Very, very powerful. We got all the high vibrations swirling from our hearts into yours. So beautiful, bright, filled with love, light, happiness, joy, and laughter. Welcome once again to Dave's Good Vibration Station, the show where we dedicate ourselves to anything and everything that raises your vibration. Such a powerful concept, such a powerful and empowering understanding. I'd like to welcome each and every single one of you here to the Vibration Station, LA Talk Radio, live with us every Sunday at 1. Oh boy, do we have a special show for you today. As you guys know, here on the Vibration Station, we are inspired by people that have taken it upon themselves to raise other people's vibration. And then they were successful in doing so. As you guys know, very, very dear friend to myself and to the Vibration Station crew, I'd like to welcome Bruce Rawls once again. How you doing, my friend? It is such a blessing to have you here on the show with us.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Well, first off, I want to say it's been a little bit too long. We've missed you here on the Vibration Station. We've had quite a few listeners send us emails saying, "Where's Bruce? We miss him." It's very true. Well, to all those listeners, Bruce is back, and he's here to raise your vibration. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with Bruce, you got some catching up to do. Just messing with you. But really, Bruce is an amazing individual. He has dedicated his life to understanding the relationship between sacred geometry and, its relationship with existence, the universe, human beings. He is the creator of geometrycode.com. He is the author of multiple books on geometry. Really just a very accomplished individual, very amazing man. It's always a pleasure to have Bruce on the show with us. So, Bruce, before we knew what we were talking about today, as always, we were throwing around a couple ideas, and I said, Bruce, was there anything specific that came to your mind or that you wanted to expand on, express to the people of our beautiful planet to raise the vibration? And Bruce says, well, there was this recent article that suggests even more that we might be living in a hologram, according to physics, right? Bruce's, I love his response to me. He goes, how about virtual reality, right? So you think about this idea of virtual reality, and the very first image that came into my head when I heard the words virtual reality was the movie Tron.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, but then all of a sudden, in like a split second, this connection happened where I said to myself, wait, virtual reality, okay, that reminds me of Tron, but wait, Tron. That is so kind of like the same idea as The Matrix. Like, it's so under the same platform concepts of the holographic matrix of reflection. So I'm going to pass the mic to my kindred spirit, my brother Bruce. And I'm very inspired by this article. Bruce, can you expand a little bit on how there is more proof, there is growing evidence that our universe is just a giant hologram?
Well, it's interesting because, and thank you for always for the always seemingly amazing introduction.
You're so sweet.
I always think, gee, am I the person he's describing? Because actually, I've only written two books, but I'm working on a third one, and I do have fun with it. In terms of expertise, I don't know anything about that, but I do have fun with it and enjoy sharing, you know, what I've come across, as many others, and yourself, of course. I think one of the things that keeps coming back to me as a metaphor for how our mind works is the virtual reality, and this is something that I have been drawn to from, you know, from my adolescent years, and reading all kinds of books on metaphysics and just generally wanting to have a deeper understanding of, you know, what's going on with this crazy world and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
And that kind of led me into, in addition to, you know, general assortment of metaphysical inquiries, the study of sacred geometry and thinking about form and you know, what is form really, and what is the nature of what we call reality.
Exactly.
And which really I think spans physics and metaphysics, which I think is interesting because, you know, a lot of the Eastern philosophies and spiritual traditions for millennia have been suggesting that, you know, this the word Maya probably comes to mind for a lot of listeners as an Eastern term describing the illusory nature of the world.
Indeed.
And so in our more contemporary, you know, Western culture, we have a whole genre of movies and films that people enjoy that one would call virtual reality in terms of a category. And among those, you mentioned The Matrix and, of course, Tron. And another favorite is The Truman Show.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
When we think, you know, we're just like in this little bubble. You know, we're our little tiny cosmic, you know, blip on the radar that we pay attention to is just so minuscule,
so minuscule
to what we could be aware of, and that's just exploring, you know, using one octave of, since your program is appropriately enough the vibration station, we see one octave of vibratory energy that we call the visible light spectrum out of conceivably, you know, an infinite number, or certainly a whole lot more octaves than we generally are aware of most of the time, with
exactly.
the exception of, you know, radio waves, which a lot of your listeners are, as we speak, using the benefit of those vibrations to take the vibrations of our voices, transcoded into electrical signal vibrations, moved through the internet into packets of digital data vibrations, and in through Skype and onto the radio waves, through various technological perturbations and modifications, and finally out back into the audio realm as acoustical vibrations again.
Wow.
But you know, when we think about all the stuff that has to happen to make that work,
right?
And how what a tiny, tiny portion of the audio spectrum, the visual spectrum, and all of our other senses and all of our other dimensions that we're aware of, that we, you know, we're just one of my favorite movies, and most people would not, you know, when you list virtual reality films, probably not think of this at the top of their list, or probably even not in the top 10 or maybe 50 or 100, but I think it belongs there. Just as, and it's a fun one.
Let's hear it.
It's a Dr. Seuss film, Horton Hears the Who. Horton Hears the Who.
I love it. I love it. I can't wait.
Have you ever seen it?
I have seen. I love Horton. You know what's funny? It was on the other night. And yes, I did. Of course, Law of Attraction. Here we go. You're talking about Horton Hears the Who. That's great. Bring it on. I can't wait for this. Let's hear it.
If you think about it, I mean, the whole premise of that wonderful little kid story, yes, quote unquote kid story, right, is that there's this elephant who's just, you know, hanging out doing his thing, and a little dust particle,
right,
floats past, and it just happens to be in the right place next to his ear,
yes,
for him to hear this most minuscule of sounds,
right,
that's emerging relative to this dust mote at the maximum volume that this little inhabitant that lives on this dust particle called Whoville, where there's this entire culture built up.
Exactly.
And they think that's their whole world.
Right.
And to them it is, of course. And they've got, you know, the Whoville events and populations and demographics, and you know,
exactly,
there's a whole Whoville.
It's an economy
history there.
It's,
you know,
a, yeah, they have a currency. They have a
all that stuff. You know, who coins, or maybe who Bitcoins? I don't know who something. But anyway, but the take home lesson for me was, you know, we make such a huge deal out of our personal stuff, you know, and
yes,
and we assign a metaphysical document that I probably mentioned on previous shows, very, very fond of, and an avid student of A Course in Miracles, talks about,
absolutely,
you know, the fact that we make specialness a huge, huge part of our everyday awareness. We assign special value to the people that we care about, family, friends, coworkers, people in our particular political party or country,
yes,
or associated with the sports teams that we like, or,
exactly,
you know, yada, yada, yada. It goes on and on and on. But it's all this myopic, tiny view of, even just on a material level, the little Whoville world that we live in.
Yes.
And
yes.
So anyway, so thank you for allowing me to digress a little bit with the Whoville film as a virtual reality category.
I love
candidate.
It. I love it, man. I love it. You definitely shifted my perspective. And you know what? What's funny, Bruce, is I remember, I think it was Monday night, Monday or Tuesday night. It was on Showtime. And I just love 3D animation films. There's something that just tickles my innocence, you know, and it just so any opportunity that I get to watch like a Toy Story or something like that, I seize it, right? So I'm watching this and it crossed my mind. I'm thinking to myself, I actually thought to myself, so here is this little civilization living on, you know, this dust, it's almost like a dandelion, right? You know, and here we are, right, by sub-preface really quick, Dr. Seuss is a genius. He understood, I believe, the laws of the universe and tried to convey them to children through stories that they would understand and connect with certain underlying knowings that they have about the universe. I've always loved Dr. Seuss. I've always thought that he had a hidden agenda along with just making children's books. I think that he kind of knew what was up beyond what we give him credit for. And I do, if I'm not mistaken, there's like a couple of studies on the relationship between Dr. Seuss's stories and, you know, the influence of kind of universal and spiritual attributes. And so really cool. But back to Horton Hears a Who. I'm watching this movie and I'm thinking to myself, we on this planet Earth, okay, we are essentially a Whoville.
Right.
Right.
Of course. Of course.
Of course.
That's the take-home lesson, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, exactly. 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 I don't know if you've seen this picture, Bruce, and listeners, of this. He looks like, you could call him your standard extraterrestrial being. He looks like a gray, like a Pleiadian. And in his hand, he's just holding like his right hand out, and he has like three just little fingers that look like energy receptors with little balls on the end.
Uh-huh.
And then floating in his hand is a galaxy, right? So in this galaxy, obviously, you know, you have suns and planets and life in this galaxy. So here's Horton holding this little dandelion with this entire civilization on it. But then here's this picture that just kind of stretches your mind a little bit of this being, right? This knowledgeable, obviously advanced, knowledgeable being holding this galaxy. Now, I understand that to us, this perception, it would be the same thing as thinking that, you know, it's literally the same thing of the Who's being held by an elephant, you know? So this concept, Bruce, is like, it's not too far out of the realm of possibility, also considering that there's now pretty much proof of genetically modifying DNA to make human beings as intelligent as we are today. Who's to say that there is not this supreme super being that is not God, that is kind of, that we're being watched over? I don't know, man. I'm going into some crazy stuff, Bruce. I'm giving it right back to you, bro.
Well, there's certainly a whole lot that we don't understand about even just the history of, you know, what we call humanity on the planet.
And, yes, yes.
I'm so there's lots more unanswered questions than there are answered, and probably best not to close the patent office just yet on inventions and a few things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to apologize for going on that rant. I just
No, that's a good one. Actually, when you're mentioning, you know, a galaxy, you know, it reminded me of another virtual reality film, which I probably a lot of your other listeners enjoy too. It's the Men in Black series.
Yes, yes.
And in that, I think it was the first episode, the first installment, where they had a cat that had a little pendant around its neck. If it was a cat or a dog, I think it was a cat. And then it turns out that the galaxy that they were trying to save was inside this pendant around the cat's neck. And you discover that during the outro credits of the film, kind of thing.
Yes,
but you know, again, it's that perspective that we you know, if, and it's very humbling. But at the same time, I think if we incorporate that humility with simultaneously the awareness that every single one of us can be aware in our minds,
yes,
of the all, and we're capable of abstract thought, we're capable of abstraction, and thinking about the entirety of existence, and we're capable of thinking beyond space and time, which a lot of spiritual and metaphysical disciplines and traditions suggest that our reality.
Yes, indeed.
Which means that if we wanted to look at what this article that we were talking about, you know, basically the idea that the universe might be a giant hologram, which would tend to corroborate again the metaphysics that is both contemporary and ancient, as well as you know, a whole lot of different kinds of traditions that suggest that, well, maybe it's all one thing. Maybe the idea of unity is really the truth, and we're in some sort of a dream or a projected universe, yes, which is what the holographic universe theory really goes toward. And exactly. And the idea of a hologram, and I imagine most listeners are probably familiar with the classic hologram with the glass plate and the split laser beam that basically impinges on a subject, and then the light is scattered and then recollected into a through beam splitters and whatnot. I'm probably not describing that very accurately, but
no,
back onto a holographic plate where the angle at which the light impinges,
right,
because of the way the light bounces off the subject area and then back onto the target plate, the entire image is in every single part of that glass plate.
Wow. Okay.
So if you shatter, you know, the old classic hologram, the original, you know, at least my understanding of the earliest prototypes for holograms were done with glass plates that had a holographic image on them. And if you broke it in half, each half of that holographic glass plate would have the entire hologram, and it wouldn't be as bright because it wouldn't be as many photons going through it.
Of course,
but it would be the same exact image, you know, minus however many you know, equivalent intersection points in that glass plate. But you could keep doing that indefinitely until you just, you know, run out of light. But
absolutely,
run out of atoms on the glass plate. But that the entire story, if you will, the entire principle, the entire identity is contained within each part.
Yes.
And it's like, well, what a perfect spiritual metaphor for what we all are.
Right.
But we're so enamored with this special, little, seemingly different and separate parts that we are. And that those separate pieces that we've made such a big Whoville deal out of become
– beautifully said.
Our justification for wars, holy and unholy.
Yes.
One might argue that there's no such thing as a holy war.
Yes.
It's an oxymoron. Because holographically, if we're all whole,
wow,
then how could one thing, one wholeness fight itself?
Bruce, you just inspired me to this idea, if you will. Okay, I'm going to say this to you, and I want, because I really cherish and value your opinions and your understandings of the universe. So what you just said, it just like connected dots in my head. This is why I love you, Bruce. You activate serious knowledge in all of our brains. You're the best.
I'm a holographic projection of you as you are of me, right?
Yeah. Well, that is very true. That is very true. I have asked, and there is definitely a vibrational equivalent of me that is asking to reflect the Bruce Rawls that is in the wholeness of who I am. So that, yeah, absolutely. That, wow, man, we are getting, we are stretching some minds, Bruce. This is cool. Okay, before I lose this, I wanted to touch on this point. So what you just said was that, okay, so contained within a hologram, each and every layer, if you will, and excuse me if I butcher the proper words for what it's named, but okay, in the hologram you have the different layers, and then within each of those layers contains the whole, but is the more layers you have, the brighter the hologram, the more visible it becomes. But if you take those layers away, you still have the whole image that's contained within every single layer. It's
right.
Just not going to be as visible because there's not as many photons. There's not as much light particles. Well, like you just said, if you apply that to the same idea of, you know, the spiritual metaphor with, you know, the whole being in the one, in all ways possible, and it's really just however much of the whole that we're revealing. The point that I'm getting at is each layer of that hologram, okay, each the brighter you get, essentially, so each layer of that hologram that's shown, that's fulfilled, the brighter you get, that is a representation of your alignment with Source. So it's like the less light you have, the less layers you are in alignment with, the less light there is. So it's like the whole is still present, but it's just not as visible. Versus if you were to be in total alignment with the Source or have all of the hologram showing through you, then it would be completely visible because it's ultimately bright, right? So it's like that's a perfect metaphor for you, for each individual being a reflection of the whole, or each individual containing the whole, almost like you're not one drop in the entire ocean, but you, Rumi's quote, but you are the entire ocean in one drop. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how many layers of that are you realizing that you are the whole part? And the more that you realize, the brighter you become, the more in alignment with Creator you become. And then that's, I guess, when you vibrate to when you just become your reality. I heard this theory from a channeler that when your consciousness vibrates at the speed of light, that's when you become your reality. So it's like, you know, it's when you are the birds, you are the bees, you are the mountains, you are the trees. So that's just that tangent, but
actually modern physics would agree with that, and not just on a metaphorical level, but on a literal level. In fact, where I think where metaphysics goes beyond physics is that it suggests that at least the non-dual metaphysics that I've been studying,
yes,
and seems to make perfect sense to me when I'm
super wise.
When I
no, it's awesome.
In my more saner moments, perhaps, is that if perfect oneness is our true state, then anything that seems to divide that, anything that seems to be separate from that, must be an aberration or a misinterpretation, or if you will, a dream or a projection of that misinterpretation.
Yes.
So if that's true, then what we think of as material form, including energy and all everything that comprises the cosmos,
yes,
if that's true, then everything that we see, including our bodies, I'm looking out the window, I see houses and trees and lawns and cars and garages and clouds and you know, buildings in the distance and whatnot.
Yes.
If all those things are really metaphors, and the planet that we live on is a metaphor, then the reality that we in a sense, and perhaps literally true, and I believe so, that we've never left, is really that abstract oneness that is,
yes,
the real, it's the identity behind the hologram. And an image can never you know, completely, just like when you go on a vacation and you come back with you know, thousands of pictures on your digital camera, your phone or whatever, and used to be rolls of film. I'm dating myself.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
But you know, when you try to convey what a place was like, you know, the images, you know, they can give you a flavor, but it's never the same as the actual experience.
Absolutely.
And I think the same thing is true with that pure abstract oneness, that I think deep down inside we all know that is our real identity. And you know, we might articulate it in different ways, but that perfect oneness that really is behind and underneath the metaphors of holograms is really the awareness that where ineffable peace and a comfort that goes beyond anything we could possibly experience by trying to find it and replicate it in the world, even though we do our damnedest to try, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
to try to make this dream of a world work for us, and you know, it'd be silly not to do the things that we can do to you know, enjoy our life and try to make it as enjoyable and peaceful and sane and happy and safe for everyone in our sphere of awareness as we can, of course.
Yes.
But I think where this holographic principle comes in is that if we recognize, if we apply some of the ideas that the Eastern traditions that expand upon the physics would go to, it would basically suggest that if we see anyone outside of ourselves, including the people we live with, the people we work with, our family, our friends, you know, people we see on TV, including the ones we quote like, unquote,
and yes,
the ones we quote don't like.
Yes, indeed.
That these are all aspects of ourselves.
Yes, very
much. And really ourself, if you want to put a capital S on it, in the word self, that would be the identity that is really behind the metaphor, right, that we metaphoric dream figures, movie actors, call ourselves, right, that we play out these, you know, these daytime and nighttime dramas in the 3D world.
Just that projecting constantly.
Pretty fantastic special effects production.
Yeah. You can say that again. It was constructed by the man himself.
Yeah, and the credits would have to have started rolling before the beginning of time in order to cover all the people, and not to mention, you know, humanoids, but also animals, vegetables, minerals, you know, and galaxies and quasars and yada yada,
right,
that would be roll off the credits of this incredible phenomenological projected dream that we call a reality.
Wow.
But we sure, you know, and appropriately enough, you know, attend to the things in our everyday lives that, you know, we have responsibilities for and that can contribute to and all those things. And like I say, it would be silly not to do those things. But at the same time, we can begin to adopt an attitude that if this is a hologram, if this is Whoville,
yes,
then I can afford,
yes,
I can actually afford to be kinder.
Yes.
Because if my reality is not just limited to this little temporal spatial blip on the radar.
Yes.
That, yes, I call my human life as Bruce Rawls, or sometimes I call myself Bruce of Fiction. Because
I love it.
And
I
there's
love
a,
it.
Richard Bach, who's one of my favorite articles, authors, actually had it wasn't articles, it was one of his books where he, in Illusions, Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, he had this little Messiah's Handbook, and one of the quotes that stuck with me from that was, and I'm going to paraphrase probably, but if you practice being fictional, you will realize that sometimes fictional characters are more real than what we call real ones.
Yes.
And again, that's very, very, very paraphrased. But if we can kind of turn it around and think, okay, well, how could this particular lifetime, you know, if I take good care of myself, maybe I'll last a century, you know, and but that's like a blip on the cosmic,
right,
radar,
right,
chronologically, and certainly in terms of the three spatial dimensions that we're all versed in
operating
from our little point in Whoville here.
Yes,
you know, we're pretty myopic. We have, you know, I'm very nearsighted, so I can say that literally and figuratively. but we're metaphorically we're very nearsighted because,
yes,
we just see the stuff that's really close to us, and like looking through the binoculars backwards. You know, we have it totally upside down.
Yes.
I mean, if we really saw everything in proper perspective, we would see super clusters of galaxies in our field of vision. It'd be the main thing that we focus on every day. Right.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, and the Earth, let alone, you know, or I should say our galaxy, let alone our solar system, let alone our planet, let alone the neighborhood or our house or office or wherever we spend most of our time,
right,
wouldn't even show up.
It'd be like no one, nothing in the universe would even have a conscious awareness that it even existed at all.
Yeah, there's a great, you know, little movie called The Powers of Ten. You can Google it and find it.
The
various forms, and it basically just shows somebody zooming in and out of the usual scale that we think of as our quote reality, unquote. And then it zooms out to, you know, cosmic proportions, and then zooms back into where we think we are, and then zooms in on a, you know, hair follicle or something like that on the person's arm laying on a blanket, and then finally into the, you know, subatomic spaces of quarks and whatnot.
Wow.
It's kind of cool, but it just
puts
things in perspective, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I'm definitely going to check that out. The Powers of Ten.
Powers of Ten, yeah. If you Google it, you'll find it pretty quick.
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, that's so really, time really and cool. space are, you know, incredibly vast from within this holographic dream that we've made up.
Right.
But if we can remember to put it in the dream perspective,
yes,
then it's like, well, okay, because that humbling perspective can also be phenomenally discouraging and depressing, thinking that, oh, well, gee, what, you know, like, Howard, I have to influence
exactly
my,
like
my well-being.
It's all for nothing. Like, yeah, it's almost
and,
like,
and that, that would like, be, you know, really, really a super downer.
Right, right.
Take that seriously.
Totally.
But that's
totally
why I was touching on the idea of our awareness.
Yes.
Is yes capable of going, spanning the entire cosmos. And if I say, think of the entire universe. No, we're not going to have a really, you know, crystal clear, you know, a la Hubble Space Telescope, you know, spending gazillion years, you know, compiling a maybe a 3D holographic model of that we could walk around in our living room or wherever to,
right,
to examine, you know, and zoom in and out of. But
exactly.
But
exactly
we can think of the whole universe.
Yes, yes.
And because we can think of it in a split second, we've just done space and time travel.
Wow.
That suggests that we're beyond that.
Wow.
What we really are as one being, seemingly fragmented into all these individual personas with their pet bodies.
Yes.
AKA need machines.
Yes.
Going around, you know,
consumer vehicles.
Yes. Ravaging whatever we can find in the world to survive, you know, and yes doing all kinds of crazy things. But if we can look at that and see how silly it is to relegate our identity, this precious thing, this truly truly unique and innocent identity.
Yes.
But only from the context of perfect oneness.
Exactly.
But the Eastern traditions and modern metaphysics, which goes beyond the physics of like this article, would suggest that from that perspective of a oneness joined as one, or a non-dual reality, that it doesn't depend on space or time,
right,
for its being.
Exactly.
From that perspective, where there is no such thing as division or separate parts or fragmentation or even fractals or holograms. So, but those can be useful metaphors of getting back to that oneness. From that perspective, then, we never left. We never,
exactly,
and again, that's what all these traditions suggest, is that perfect oneness is our natural state.
Yes.
So it sounds all, you know, well and good and a great theory, and if anybody, you know, says, I resonate with that, that makes sense, then the obvious question comes up is, well, how do I apply that in my everyday life?
Right, exactly.
And I think that the way to do that is, and again, this is from studying non-dual metaphysics for a few years and trying to distill some of the key ideas, I think the way to do that is to be, number one, to be kind.
Yes.
Because what that does is that minimizes the differences in the separation in our own minds.
Right.
And so as your aptly named show, The Vibration Station, suggests, is that because we communicate continuously, not just verbally and nonverbally, but in terms of the realm of mind that we're not even aware of.
Yes, telepathically.
And on, yes, on avenues that we can't even imagine.
Exactly.
And if this article suggests that, you know, the quantum entanglement, that, you know, that every part of the universe is really, if we extrapolate where I think physics is going with that every part of the universe is communicating with every other part.
Exactly.
Then that means that whatever we think about anyone else, whether it's you mentioned seeing a really bad car collision on the way in, if we can wish the people involved,
yes,
in the best possible outcome.
If, yes,
we can,
yes,
if we can, you know, you see things on the news or on Facebook or wherever, and you see, you know, horrific things like, you know, earthquakes in the Himalayas or,
right,
or typhoons or you know, all kinds of crazy stuff that happens or just seeming insensitivity of you know, humans or groups of humans to other groups, and
yes,
yes, and we say, well, okay, yeah, that's silly, but if I condemn the people that, right, are involved on seemingly either side of that,
exactly,
if I make it a we they paradigm. If I try to take sides,
yes,
then I'm ignoring the physics.
Exactly.
I'm ignoring the metaphysics.
Exactly.
And I'm saying that differences are important.
Yes.
And I'd rather have a reality based on warfare,
yes,
and conflict,
separation over oneness, like
right,
just total.
Then one where we all have the opportunity to remember the peace that we never left.
Exactly, Bruce. That beautifully said, man. Beautifully said. Something that I wanted to ask you, from a physics perspective, right? So I think on today's show we've covered and almost like proven through, various examples and just discussion that there is definitely the possibility that everything is just a beautiful masterpiece of a hologram. But the one thing that is always and will always take precedence, at least in my mind, when I think of creation, when I think of source, when I think of the universe, the one word that will always take number one priority is love. And I guess the last question for today's show that I'd like to ask you, Bruce, is through these understandings and quantum physics that everything is a hologram and it is just a projection of the individual's consciousness, vibration, and we can manipulate that projection by our expectations, our belief systems, our vibration, right? What we put out, we get back. So if we put something different out, then we will get back a different response. Bruce, my question for you is how do we where's the proof in the universe that it's all for love? Where's the proof in the physics that literally the particles expand because of love? Do you know what I'm saying? Like I guess maybe that's the proof, but where's the proof that says it's, yeah, you're here to experience, and you're, you know, as a human being, you're going to have contrasting experiences, but that contrast will slingshot you into a greater understanding, into a greater love for yourself. Where do we find the basics? I see expansion. I see the platform and the quantum basics of expansion in the universe, but where does the principle of this unconditional love come into play in each and every single molecule of our universe?
That is a great question. And I would say that we're probably never going to find on the level of form any kind of proof,
right,
that the basis for perfect oneness is what I would call unconditional acceptance or perfect love.
Yes, yes. Unconditional acceptance. That's beautiful.
Perfect. And I think that one of the things that has been a challenging idea for me, but I'm finding it more and more useful over the last better part of a decade, having reacquainted myself with some of the non-dual metaphysics of A Course in Miracles in particular, is the notion that if we postulate the idea that the universe was actually made up as a response to a belief that there could possibly be more than one thing, and that we could have taken this perfect oneness, this perfect unconditional acceptance, this perfect, unimaginably complete peace, and say, not today, I'm going to try something
else. Right. Yes.
Then it takes on a whole different meaning. And it's incredibly challenging.
Yes.
As a concept to ponder and wrap your head around. And, you know, and also to incorporate that with the idea of the Eastern idea that you know, if this universe is really a dream, then what if that dream initially was made up as an escape mechanism? And as a fugitive dreamland to try to hide out in from what we thought was going to be retribution for shattering perfect oneness, or wow. or if you want to use a more spiritual slash religious metaphor, you know, throwing God under the bus and saying, and saying I think I'll go off on my own. You know, I'll be a prodigal here.
But
what if the idea and of course Miracles refers to this as the tiny mad idea. What if that never happened? What if we are in addition to being in a hologram, using another metaphor, what if we're in a just an incredibly vast, sophisticated dream of duality? And the whole point of it is to wake up from it and to recognize that nothing happened. And we can afford then, from that perspective, to let go of our grievances about all the things that seem to be happening, not only in our personal little tiny Whoville part of the world that we call the solar system, and more specifically planet Earth, and more specifically very selected aspects, very special aspects of things that we are heavily invested in, of happening a certain way or not happening a certain way. And we all do it. So I mean, it's not like, you know, pointing fingers at anyone, but what if there's really no fingers to point? What if the truth of us is that we're not bodies, that we are this essence? What if we're engaged in this colossal dream, and the way out of it, as we were touching on earlier, is to be kind, is to be considerate, and to be as loving as we can, and to look for the shared interests that include everyone. And that's really challenging, because there's always usually a few holdouts of, well, yeah, I think everybody's part of this perfect spirit except for, well, maybe these people.
Yeah, right.
Or this group. Exactly. Or this nationality. Or this religion or this political party or whatever, you know. And as long as there's a but, you know, if we get our butt in the way.
Yes.
Then we're going to trip over the duality that we made up. And so, like I say, it's not an easy approach, but it's incredibly fulfilling when you allow yourself moments of respite from the incessant blather that our egoic mind is always doing to try to keep the projection going. It's like this, you know, what if this holographic projector is just like this burdensome thing that we think we have to keep going in order to escape from some kind of imagined retribution for a crime that was never committed. I think I shattered perfect oneness. Now, we might not say it that way, but what if deep down inside we all think that our very existence in this world is some kind of a prison sentence for having messed up this oneness.
That is,
if that's the case, then what would be a more sane alternative than to find a way out and use the very specifics that we made up as a way of turning it around and saying, oh, if I forgive myself for making up a specific that seems to put me at odds with someone else or some group of things else or the planet. You know, I blame the environment for my health or whatever. But all that has to do with inevitably is identifying with a particular body on a particular space-time coordinate system and thinking, this has got to be me, right?
Right. That is so interesting, Bruce. Man, we could go on for an endless amount of time, literally just
well,
diving
hopefully we
into
won't,
this.
But
hopefully, exactly.
Hopefully, we'll wake up from the dream eventually and figure out how to do this and help each other do it. Huh?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. And hey, that's why we gather here on the Vibration Station every Sunday, my man. Unfortunately, it looks like we have once again come to the end of our episode. Bruce, I want to thank you so much from the deepest depths of my heart and soul. Always my unconditional love, light, happiness, abundance, joy, and laughter from my heart to yours, Bruce. You are an amazing man. The knowledge that you have to spread to this world is absolutely undescribable, and I feel so grateful to have you as a part of the Vibration Station crew.
And takes one to know one, Dave.
Well, thank you. That means the world to me. That means the world to me, man. But hey, listeners, make sure to check out geometrycode.com. You can also check out brucerawls.com. That's B-R-U-C-E, last name R-A-W-L-E-S.com. Geometrycode.com. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter. That's Good Vibes Station. And check us out, glowsoulware.com, glowsacredgeometry, and glowlightware.com as well. Thank you so much, Bruce. We love you with all of our hearts. And listeners, we love you so much as well. Once again, I will say this for the very last time of today's show. All the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, abundance, and laughter from our hearts to yours. LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. Thank you guys so much. We love you, and we will talk to you next Sunday. Thank you, Bruce. Stay in the light, brother.